T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Oh, hi there, Al Dukes here. Welcome to episode 2 of my WNEW podcast. I've been having a bit of a hard time getting some of the guys to commit. Opie seemed really into it when I first approached him, and now I can't really seem to get him to return any more of my emails. Jim Norton also seemed very interested, but I'm having a hard time getting him to commit to a time as well, so hopefully both or one of those work out. Fortunately, I was able to get time with my next guest, Ron Bennington, one half of the Ron and Fez show from the WNEW talk days. I had not had an extended conversation with Ron for a really long time, so it was really great to catch up with him about the WNEW years. Here's my talk with Ron Bennington. Sounds good.
Is that something you even care about? Or you
sound? Know? No, sound, yeah, I do care about.
I don't know. When I listen to FAN, I go, what the fuck is going on there?
No, sound is very important. Now, I know, like, in your Florida days, you were top of the food chain, right? You were a morning show there in many cities, all the big cities, very popular. So how is it that you ended up in New York at NEW, but taking an overnight shift?
Well, the whole point was, that show, the first show, the Ron and Ron show, fell apart. The shift stuff never mattered to me in radio. I always thought it was like ridiculous. I hate it, morning radio. You do it, right? It's awful.
Yeah, it stinks.
It's the worst. It
takes years off your life with the lack of sleep and waking up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and you just really don't have a life. You nap like a lunatic. So I had never had any plans on doing morning radio again. And then, what are we going to do now that the one show had ended? And me and Fez decided we wanted to work together. And we were talking to some people. And then Jeremy Coleman was the guy for us. And he was like, hey, we could do something, blah, blah, blah. Do you realize how many people are in this shift and that shift? And, you know, I had the things to roll these things out nationally and all that kind of stuff. And so we said, okay, when you get something together, you know, give us a call.
Did you meet him at some sort of like radio convention?
No. I think we might have sent him something because, I mean, there was only a couple of real FM talk stations in the country then. And he was the guy, who had the big station in D.C. And he called us and then he flew down and hung out with us for a while. And we were like, we don't know what we're going to do. He was like, but let's do something.
Now, after Ron and Ron had ended and you and Fez were doing a morning show in Daytona Beach, right?
Yeah, we were really doing that as kind of a, hey, can we even do this? Can we, you know what I mean? It was kind of an off-Broadway deal.
Because Fez was on Ron and Ron, but he was sort of a character, right? How much would he talk per hour?
Well, that's a really great question, because when we were doing rock radio, he talked way less than I personally thought. I only found out later that he didn't get a lot of mic time. And that's because, you know, I didn't really come from radio, and I was laughing just as hard during the commercials and stupid rock songs than anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was always hilarious to me, just the funniest. So we had to figure out the broadcasting aspect of it, as if it would work or not. And it was also a time that I was just getting sober, like really clean for the first time probably ever. And so we were kind of tiptoeing into it a little bit, but having a ton of fun, but not exactly sure where it was going. As a matter of fact, at one point I said, why don't we just go out as a stand-up team? We'll do a stand-up team like it was the 1960s. And he was like, I'm not comfortable unless everybody knows me. You know what I mean? I don't want to go out and have to sell Fez from the start every night. And I still think that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because I think he's hilarious in front of an audience. But, you know, he also always had this kind of a control thing about what he was willing to do. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't even know, because he was an actor when he was in college, but I didn't know that he was really nervous before he went on a stage, because he was always great.
Yeah. So then you was NEW a talk station already when you were originally talking to Jeremy, or was it going to flip to talk? Like, where was WNEW in that process? Because I know Opie and Anthony got there when they were still playing classic rock music, and it was Opie and Anthony and all the old rock jocks who had seen a change coming. So certainly Opie and Anthony weren't really welcomed when they got there.
No, they've never been welcomed anywhere in their careers. That's the beauty of those guys. They had flipped, I think, right before, but whoever was the PD was gone. And, you know, and then Ken and Jeremy came in as GM and PD. And he said, do you guys want to go to New York? And I always wanted to live in New York my whole life. And we're like, we got to do this.
But you had already had a family. So was that weird to say, hey, we're going to up and go to New York when you had lived in Florida most of your life?
Well, first of all, they had lived in Florida. My kids lived in Florida their life. But no, my kids loved it. They love New York City. They're not like you.
Yeah.
Where you're some kind of suburban weirdo. Mm-hmm. They were very cool people and still are cool people.
They were
we jumped at the opportunity as a family. Like, we loved it. And we loved it from day one, even though moving into New York City is about as tiring as you could get. Like, it's nothing is easy about New York City. And I remember at one point just being like exhausted between personal life and then trying to figure out NEW. And I'm just like, I feel like I work a real job all the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Instead of being off at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
Work it all day.
It was just a living a life that, you know, it's not New York City is not set up to be easy. And until you find that rhythm, which always takes everybody like a couple of months. But no, I didn't have any, you know, like I didn't have any concerns about, was it going to last long or not last long, you know, because I felt like, you know, I'll go do stand up or I'll do something. I don't feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself or my family about any of this.
Was that a radio thing to get to the number one market, or you just like the idea of New York?
New York City. New York City was it. And it's still like New York and those telephones was a high. Like, it's hard to explain to anyone who doesn't do this. You know what I mean? Like, I had done all of Florida, and on any given night, the calls were better than all the time that I was in Florida. You know what I mean? Just callers that were hysterical. I don't know if the time you were with us that you did Comedy Pyramid.
Yes.
And stuff like those things were unbelievable. And then I would just, you know, talk to somebody and I go, you're funny, man. Why don't you come down and hang out with us some nights? And that's how we ended up with most of the producers.
Right.
Just people we thought were funny and we should try to figure out, you know, what to do with. But that time, and on my way there, a program director called me up because I didn't know ONA. And he goes, hey, ONA, fuck with everybody, you know, just be careful. And I was like, I don't give up. I don't know them. You know what I mean? I don't give a fuck because I couldn't imagine worrying about such a thing. And then me and Fez were, I picked him up at the airport. Me and him were driving into New York. And I think they had like an hour best of every day of ONA at a certain time.
Yeah, I think from 2 to 3 before they would come on.
Yeah. And we were listening to it and it was fucking hysterical. I remember it like Anthony was doing this Bill Clinton voice, but it was like he was on Cops or something. And we were laughing our asses off and we're like, these fucking guys are good. You know what I mean? Like we thought radio guys were hacked because we hadn't run into anybody who was coming at it the way we did for all those years. So we were like already juiced coming into town.
And then when you were bringing like Fez, I felt like I could, I felt like I knew what Fez was going through in some ways. Like I have no family as far as like, I have no wife, no kids. So when Fez was coming with you to New York, did you feel like you had, you were bringing along another kid in Fez? Like you had to look out for him. He didn't know what New York City was. You guys really came as a group to the city, almost like a family. Like he was part of the family.
Well, he was part of my family in Florida. You know what I mean? Like Fez and I, because I knew Fez got into radio because I was doing radio. You know what I mean? Like I knew Fez from this little comedy club I had started. He was like an open micer. And then when he graduated from college, I guess he came to me and he goes, hey, I have a degree in broadcasting. You think I could just come down. It's not a big deal. You got your degree for no reason. You know what I mean? You just come in and if you're good, it'll work out, you know? So, but Fez was incredibly, and still is very, very close with my family and me. I talk to him every day just about. You know, I just felt like it's something you got to take a shot at. I just don't sit around and think about things like that. You know, if somebody calls you up and you say, and they say, here's an opportunity, I think the regret that you will have that it is if you play it safe, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if it's like that anymore. I think about that a lot. Like radio guys now, do they want to leave? You know, is it better to be the big guy in Tampa? Or because that's a great life, or do you try to go to a bigger market and get a bigger audience and try to become a success in a place like New York City?
I think the biggest mistake you can make is hanging around too long anywhere. You know what I mean? Like the only fun in radio is the startup. The startup is a blast, but to be that guy doing time and temp and, you know, back selling a laundry list of rock songs, that's a death sentence, man. You know what I mean? That you might as well be selling tires or something. It just doesn't make any sense to do that. What really is fun is to have a project, not a job.
And how would you describe that show, the NEW show? And let's say the time when it was on after Opie and Anthony at 7 o'clock at night.
Well,
when people would... Yeah.
The show went through a couple of different things, right? First, I remember Jeremy said, we need a hook, you know, because I got to sell this to the bosses. And I don't know who I was talking to, but I came up with the .com idea. Like, oh, this is going to be a show about websites and blah, 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 because it was the big thing at the time. And the salespeople thought it was amazing. Like they were so excited because they would come after this new money. And I remember very early on, I'd only been there a little while, we went down to a place they called Silicon Alley for some reason. There was a bunch of .com places and it was going to be the East Coast version of Silicon Valley. And we meet with this guy and he writes a check like I never saw in Florida. And the whole thing, it was like free phone or phone free. And you were never going to have to pay bills again. No more phone bills. You're going to talk to each other through the computer. you know? And I'm like, ah, yeah, talk to each other through the computer. Yeah, love it. And they want it to be like, this is how you're going to do the show. And I'll go, yeah, we'll do that. And we'll do phones, but we'll do this too. And me and the sales guy, we leave there with this enormous check. And I don't think the thing ever worked, even slightly. And we were going through all these stupid people who, you know, they had money and, oh, this is the way it works. And you're going to get the paybacks for every time that you buy something. I go, yeah, because people are going to buy things on the computer. Sure, I get it. And then we get a nickel back from you, whatever it is. And then we can get some kind of shoes for it or something. And then the whole dot-com bubble busted. And, you know, luckily we didn't have to do that anymore. This bullshit thing that we had set up that we did like 10% of the show was that 90% was us fucking around.
And you, and that was when the internet was weird. Like there was a guy who had a website where he was going to chop off his own foot or something. And you would talk to that guy.
All kinds of shit like that. And here's the thing, as I remember, they hadn't even worked out Google yet. You know what I mean? So yeah. You were still doing Ask Jeeves and people couldn't even find websites most of the time. Like people would set up a website, but how do you find, you know, everyone forgets Google put everything together. You know, Yahoo used to blow. All that stuff was crazy. So then we moved down. Jeremy said, you don't have to do the .com anymore. And then, because, you know, I have to tell you, I mean, I was crazy about O&A. I just felt like we had met guys that were much like us. Because I remember when I was in Florida, Sonny Fox said to me, you were the first guy that ever used his own name and his own voice. He goes, it totally freaked me out. This is that transition that I had made. And then I saw Anthony the same way. He was the same guy as he was off the air. And before that, you know, people were doing radio voices. You know, even shock jocks were doing radio voices. So the whole point was to, okay, O&A are doing in the going in one direction. Let's make sure we don't do the same thing. So they were heavy conversation. We went heavy phones. You know, we had naked chicks. We had cool chicks that were listeners who would come in and party with us on Fridays. You know what I mean? Do something that was similar, but not stepping on the show before you. And it was really working. I mean, it was a really hot time to be doing. It was still, I think it might be the most fun I've ever had.
Oh, for sure. But it was nerve-wracking too. Like it felt like every day that place, everyone was trying to top what they had done the day before for 4 hours. And it's like, I felt like you couldn't keep up with that. Eventually you're going to hit a spot where you can't keep topping yourselves.
Well, you know, that happened to us with Ron and Ron, where we were like, we did 5,000 people at this morning show. The next time we want to have 7,000 people come out and, you know, we did this and that. So we always just tried to get bigger. And yeah, what happens is what happened to O&A, that it eventually, you know, imploded on them.
Right. Because you have to keep pushing it a little bit at each time.
Right. But see, the thing is, we weren't going to do that, Ron and Fez, because we were really not doing the stunt stuff in the same way that those guys were. And that's the dangerous part of it. You know what I mean? That's the part where you find out somebody gets hurt or, you know, whatever it happens to be that freaks out the straights. That's the big problem. That's the big problem for everybody now, is when people who are not your audience get offended. I don't think your audience ever gets offended. You know, your audience could be like, that was a shitty show today. And that's it.
Well, that was one of the things I remember Opie and Anthony, when they moved to XM, I remember them saying, I don't know if it was on the air, but that the difference of being on WNEW was anybody could bump into you by accident and be offended. And that was fun. Whereas at XM, especially in the beginning, when they were not only on XM, but were on an additional pay channel, you had to pay to say, I want Opie and Anthony, that it was their hardcore listeners. And you were never going to run into an old lady who bumped into this station or somebody that you would offend. And they felt like they missed that part being on satellite with just their fans.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know what I mean? There's nothing like doing that local scene. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing like being on in New York, because it is a tight rope back, or it used to be back then. Nobody's doing it now, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, I guess from a corporate standpoint, it doesn't make the same kind of sense. And obviously, you're going to go from being funny to being obnoxious at some point, because of the shock thing is the big problem of it. You know, the shock thing, it can't last.
Now, one of the things when I first, and I had been like a long time Howard Stern listener when I got to you guys in March of 2001. So I was already like 31, 32 years old. And being around you guys and seeing the way you did the radio show, I had never in my life considered that what you heard coming out of your speakers wasn't 100% real life. That never crossed my mind. And it made me rethink everything that I had listened to on Howard Stern for all those years. Was this real? Was this embellished? I had never run into that before. Had you guys been doing that sort of thing for a long time?
First of all, not only had we been doing it, it's the way the world works now. You know what I mean?
No clue.
First of all, you have to think the same thing if you're watching Fox or MSNBC, because they're trying to get people to come back the next day. If you're watching ESPN, do you really think they're that angry?
No more. But I did.
Happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's no way that somebody is going to give a shit if the Knicks drop a game in April. It doesn't make sense. And yet people are acting like they do care. So yeah. And plus, you know, I had a carny background. Me and Fez were also very much into wrestling when we were kids.
Yes.
So we got the point that you're supposed to do this for an audience. You know what I mean? That has to there has to be story arcs all the time. Now, the weird thing is, because you do have, if you're going to do some of these things, even though you may be a work instead of a shoot, the work can turn into a shoot at any given time.
Yes.
That's the danger.
And the brilliance of it as well, right? So even though I knew the ball busting was part of the work, it would still piss you off and get a real reaction from somebody. Like, well, even though you knew we were doing trying to fill a 4-hour show, it would still get to the point where you were legitimately pissed off at what was going on.
Of course you were, especially if in the terms of that, the other person was getting your goat. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You can always cross the line. And you know, Billy Staples was great at that. I mean, he could annoy. Joe Poo could annoy. That was one of the reasons why they were there, is that they would look for weaknesses in their coworkers and exploit it. And I never knew a radio show where the producers didn't turn on each other or didn't look for a reason to out the other person on the air, whether it was our show or any show.
And that was the other thing. When I left NEW, I never felt like I was in another place where someone was gunning for my job. And I always thought that was strange. Like at NEW, everyone was going for your job, right? So Rory was going to try to take my job, or Joe Poo. And it was a legitimate thing where everyone sort of upped their game to try to impress the host, to get them, to give them more responsibilities on the show. And when I left NEW, it never happened again. Like one was ever gunning for my job.
Because it wasn't real then. Jeremy wasn't going to allow that to happen. He wasn't going to allow a boxing match decide who was going to be producer.
But
that's
insane. It is insane. But I think back then, Jeremy and program directors like that wanted what the host wanted. And if the host wanted the decision to be made based on a boxing match, then that's what we were doing. But I don't think it would go on today. But I do think that was a reality then, that you could have gone down the hallway and go, Al lost a boxing match. He's no longer working here. And Jeremy would go, okay, well, we'll do the paperwork.
I think that just goes to show how lost you were in that whole thing. The fact that you still...
I'm still lost.
Yeah. Yeah. You never got it. That was one of the things, the wet behind the ears things that you were. And it was the thing that got to Jeremy about us. He used to call us the cruel circus because he really got what we were doing more than even other hosts did. You know what I mean? He understood that this was like some kind of just a dark circus act from the Middle Ages, you know?
Well, I remember like
kick out of it.
I used to annoy Opie on the air. Opie hated me, everything about it. But that was all based on, I felt like I was the puppet, right? And you guys were the puppet master. And I asked Anthony, did Opie know that I didn't really... wasn't really that infatuated with him and all stuff? He goes, no, he did not. He bought it 100%.
So here's the other part you don't know. You didn't fit in there anyway. You know what I mean? You were going to annoy a guy like Opie. You know what I mean? Like everything about you, you were like, because you were willing to run a dump button and shit like that. And you would also, rather than being funny, you would try to do, like, I'll never forget you saying that you shit standing up. And I thought
wiped standing up. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that, first of all, you didn't say it at the time. You said that you shit because you said that you would be standing and holding on to the top of the things. So if you're saying now it's just wipe, you're fucking working us. But at the time, that was the kind of shit that made everybody thought that you were fucking annoying, and you loved being annoying.
It was such a high when I was able to, like, the first time I did it, I think, was when I said I was going to my cousin's wedding and I was going to give a $35 gift. Now in like New Jersey, you're giving $200 or, you know, and the people were pissed. The callers, we pay this much for the wedding thing. That felt so great to contribute that, you know, but then it was like, then the show's over. What do you got for tomorrow? And that's the stuff that I couldn't wrap my head around, the amount of content that you had to create. And back then it wasn't even like put up on a podcast. So if somebody didn't hear it, that was it. That was your one shot of hearing it.
I would also say this. That's the beauty of it. Yeah. That kind of radio is sandcastles. So if you had a win, who gives a shit? If you had a loss, who cares? And then people would also remember it way better than it ever was. You know what I mean? Like, I have people still telling me that they remember these things that I don't remember happening that way all the time, you know?
Well, also, I only was on the show for a year and a half. I guarantee fans of the show think I was there 5 years because of the amount of things that went on that were memorable in that year and a half.
Well, I mean, we weren't there, you know, all that much more before you or after you. It was only a couple years, I think. And then we went to D.C. when NEW blew up. But, I do think that's the beauty. I mean, look at Earl was the same way. He did all these things. And it's not like that's not Earl, what he did. Right. But he also knew that he was aggravating people. And it's not as good as being funny, but it's the next best thing. And it's very, very wrestling, because if you're not the face, you got to be a heel and you have to be a very good heel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to fit in with the other characters of the show.
Of course. Of course. But you, like, in terms of Seinfeld, you were like Newman. You know what I mean? Now, I don't think the guys on Seinfeld hated Newman, but a big part of the audience hated him. You know?
Yeah, but I also think the thing with radio that's different from TVs and movies is that I don't know if it's because it's 4 hours a day every day and people generally now are using their real names, that you assume that more things coming out of your speaker are 100% real. So I think that people do think, or they do legitimately don't like you from what they hear coming out of the radio and do think you are that way. And then a part of you is that way. You know, it might be exaggerated a little bit, but you know, my stories were real. I did go to the bathroom and wipe myself standing up or go standing up. Like, I did do those things, but it was fun to get a reaction from the audience knowing that you, that was a unique thing about you.
Yeah. But I also think that is true of whoever you talk to. To me, the show that you really have to watch out for is any show who goes, "We're always going to tell you the truth." That's the biggest lie. And I don't give a shit if it's political or sports. That person is a goddamn liar when he says, "You're always going to get the straight thing from me. I've got it for you," because he's still selling. He's still selling entertainment.
But I would think I would, like, you and Fez would even only let in the minimal amount of people on what you were doing.
Well, most of the time, and this might be even hard for you to believe, is that we weren't discussing it. It was happening in the moment. You know what I mean? And sometimes the phones suck. So you're like, "Billy, Al, get in here. What is it that you guys were arguing about?" You know, you just try to get some, you're just trying to get anything going, you know? And like you said, 4 hours, you can't write that. You can't write 4 hours. So you're improvising. And if it works out that somebody says something ridiculous that they made out with their cousin or something, you're like, "Okay, we got the next hour," you know? Beautiful.
And for as long as I worked there, like, people used to ask me, they'd be like, "Is Fez gay? Does Fez talk like that?" I'm like, "I don't know. And I work there every day. I don't have the answers. I don't know what is real and what is not real." It all, it just blurs together, even for somebody in the mix of it.
This is the complicated thing about Fez. At the time you did that, that you were there, Fez thought he was playing a gay character.
Right.
And that went on his whole career. And then one day he decided, wait, you know, he was talking to a shrink and he was like, "Oh, I created the character that is me." and that really fucked him up. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that was falling through the whole fucking mirror for him. But this was a funny thing when I was doing the Ron and Ron show. And like I said, I would bring Fez in and we immediately knew that, you know, Fez, because he talked that way. I mean, he took, you know, the Fez Watley character is not that far ahead of him when he's just being his naturally funny self. He would sell it a little more, but if he was going to tell you a funny story as himself, it would not be that far away from the kind of voice that he uses, you know? So when he used to come on and the show, people would say, "Hey, is Fez gay? Is Fez gay?" to me all the time. And I go, "I don't know." And then when it was Ron and Fez, people would say to me, "Hey, are you guys gay?" And I'd be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" You know what I mean? Like, hey, this all stopped being so fun.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was hilarious to both of us all the time. And then he would always play that up.
And I loved the built-in stories that went along with the various characters. Like, the Fez had a girlfriend in Niagara Falls.
Ontario, Canada. Yeah.
Ontario, Canada. And then you would ask for a photo of her and he'd send you a picture. You'd say, "This is the picture that comes with the wallet." Well, she's a wallet model. You know, it was like these built-in.
Right. And that was stories. Because, he had plenty of comfort with a guy hiding his sexuality when it turned out he was a guy hiding his sexuality.
So great. Let's call her up. She's a logger. I think she was also a logger, right? Let's call her. She's in the woods. She's logging.
And I will be honest, like, we never sat down and wrote that. That's all improv. He's so fast. And to me, when I think back over the entire time I've known him, which is like, I don't know, it's got to be close to 30 years probably or something around that. That was the funniest, in my opinion, he's ever been, was N.E.W. I mean, he was just on fire all the time.
And Fez had characters that would call in. You had characters that would call in. Actual caller listeners would call in as characters. It was, again, a mix. You didn't know, other than knowing in the studio, seeing you on the phone being Iris, Fez being Andre the Giant or Jan Brady. But then others would call. Like, there was a kid who called in the Jobber. I don't know if that was a real kid.
Yeah, that was a real kid.
Remember that kid?
Yeah, what's going on, guys?
He always called to yell at me and like bully me or bully whoever was in the studio. And you knew it was a little kid.
Joe Jr. said that he was Joe Pooh's son and he drank his own pee.
Yeah.
Kenny Allen was a kid that called. That kid was hysterical.
Now, was Kenny Allen your son?
Well, how could that be?
I don't know.
Wouldn't I know if it was
my son?
Yes,
you would know. That's what I am asking.
I will only say this. I think Kenny Allen was Joe Jr. That's the thing.
You think he had multiple characters?
Yeah, I think it was the same kid. Now, here's the thing, Al. What difference does it make?
I need to know.
Why? That is what keeps you being as tight-assed as you are.
Well, because you do a show now with your daughter. And if Kenny Allen was your son, that's the fact that your family grew up doing this is awesome. Like, I loved the idea when I don't know where I heard this from, but when I heard Kenny Allen was your son, I was like, that is genius.
Yeah. Well, everything about it's genius.
Kenny Allen always wanted to be a robot or pretend robot.
And then wouldn't let us, we would try to play with him and he was telling us we were doing it the wrong way, which by the way,
where does that even come from?
I'm going to tell you something, right?
Of Kenny Allen.
The thing is, Gail's daughter is very much, when you play with her, she tries to tell you what to say in the bit. She's always like, no. And then she will do a line read for you. She's 2.5. But, you know, like I said, my kids grew up with me and Fez. And, you know, we were joking all the time. Everybody, you know, got it. And, I don't know. Maybe it's like being a trapeze family or something.
Right. It's in your blood.
But you still not knowing after 20 years is hysterical.
Correct. And not knowing if the Jobber was your son. He could have been everybody. I don't know.
He could have been everybody. Who knows?
What's going on?
Here's the other thing. I think it's funny that you act like you didn't know that you were trying to annoy Opie when you broke the foosball table, which by the way wasn't even Opes. You know
No, I did know I was being used in that way on the program. I did catch on to that. But yeah, and even the way you did I got drunk, accidentally made out with another man and kicked over Anthony's foosball table.
Right. First
so after replacing that in the office, not on the air, back in the office, you go, no, it would be great. Pinball machine back there. It'd be awesome. All the guys would love it. You should try to get one. I go, oh, it's a great idea. So a guy is willing to give us a pinball machine and trade it out every few months. You sick and tired of the Rolling Stone pinball machine? We'll bring you the Kiss pinball machine.
Right.
So the guy brings it in. And on the air, of course, I say that I got the pinball machine. I bought it for Opie. So then he smashes. It's a 1966 Rolling Stones pinball machine. It's now in pieces. And the guy calls me and says, did they really smash my? I go, yeah, it's in pieces. They've smashed your pinball machine. And it wasn't my pinball machine. And I didn't purchase it for Opie. But again, the whole thing happens. And now I'm in the middle. Now there's a smashed pinball machine. Now I owe this guy a pinball machine. Like, it was chaos. That place was chaos.
But here's the thing. You're in the middle of a classic bit. Why aren't you celebrating that?
I can celebrate. It's like, I have this tape of when I was leaving the show and you guys had put together this tape. And on the thing, you say, you know, I bet you, you know, in a number of years, we're going to look back on this. He's going to really enjoy his work. And I can now. I can look back. It's 20 years. But at the moment, it was very stressful.
Well, thank God for that. You know what I mean? Thank God that you had a thing like that. Now you're able to handle every other part of your life.
Everything's simple now.
Yeah. But do you know the success, the people that have done our show, they're going off and doing other things? Yeah, because they know how to put together a show. They're not just getting coffee. Like a lot of producers, you ever see a lot of producers, you find out that they're making, you know, dinner reservations or right. picking up clothes. I never did that to the producers. You know, I'd had them get down on the ground and go down on a go-go dancer. That's the kind of thing that you need to learn how to do.
I also thought it was funny when we were there at NEW and we thought, you know, we were really, you know, getting our asses kicked being producers on the show. And then, well, one of your producers from Florida came up and it was like, these guys got it easy compared to what we were doing.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that was
Flipper, I mean, I think, came up.
Yeah. I remember when we used to do that show, it was much more physical. There was much more physicality that took place. All this stuff would be seen as, you know, as bad these days. So obviously yes. people don't do it anymore. But at the time, that was the game. That's what everybody, you know, had to do to be a part of it. And like I said, everybody went on and has done very well. You know, look at you. You're sitting there at the fan every day. You don't have to do anything. You're watching the show take place. You know, I just see you acting like you're on the computer, but nothing happens.
No, I'm just on Twitter.
You bring nothing to the show. You're zero help to them.
It does make me think with your show over the years, you change out producers a lot. And I actually think that's a good thing. Right. Like and I think about that. Like, I wouldn't want my show to change me out, but I get why you would want to shake it up every couple of years and go, you know, let's get a new person in here. Cause each person, like I thought that, and this wasn't at NEW, but I thought when Dave came on as your producer, that guy like took it then took like whatever I was doing and took that to another level where he did that to annoy the audience and physical stuff. Like
he's unbelievable.
He was unbelievable. Yeah.
And now he has a morning show in Jersey. Yes. I'm telling you, in terms of like, if we ever put together the list of producers all time, you're not even top 10. I mean, exactly. You also did what I consider like the night that you decided to make out with that guy. And tricked. then you cried and laid in Mike Colt's arms. And I'll never forget that night because I'm like, I don't know guys like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That was
I don't know this kind of softness. And I never knew anyone as sensitive as Mike Colta, who would sit there and hold on to you while you were sobbing to him.
That was, I did appreciate that. Yeah. And then we went to go see Bon Jovi, I think, the next day. He took me.
And then you're like, I'm like, you're worried that you look gay and look what you're doing now. And you're so-called straight life. You're lying in another person's arms, sobbing to him.
On the drinking shows, I think I actually talked myself into getting drunker quicker because they knew the minute I started drinking, I was no longer responsible for
anything. And everybody liked you. If you remember,
right.
Everybody liked you during those shows.
Right. Cause I would just trash everybody at work, you know.
Yeah, you were great.
Opie and Anthony crew, management.
You suddenly weren't this tight ass. You were a lot of fun. There's this Danish movie right now called Another Round. You should be drinking every day. That's the thing. That's the real you. That's the you everybody likes.
Right. Yeah. Talkative, outgoing.
This other asexual, effeminate guy that you play, this strange Republican.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like January 6th, I'm like, is that Al? There was about six different times where I thought I saw you running through the Capitol.
That was not me. I did not go through the Capitol.
Is this the only reason that you asked me to do this? You're like this whole thing of what is the truth? You're like an ex-girlfriend who wants to get back and talk to you after 20 years to find out what happened.
What was it about me that ended the relationship? What was the show prep like for you and Fez before you got to us? Like, what did you and Fez, like when you would come in, I know you guys would take the train in together.
Yeah.
Would you guys talk prior to that? or would on the train, would you guys throw around ideas of what types of topics, or how did that, I know there was like, Fez used to keep this list of kind of fun topics that were evergreen things that, right. you know, things yeah. that weren't going on in the news, but if it was a slow day or whatever, but how did you guys decide what you were going to open with? To me, that's always like the big one, right? Like, what are you opening with? And how would you guys figure that out?
You know, I don't really, you know, because that evolves all the time over your career, whether it's a piece of news or whether it's a bit. And I remember when we decided to be very phone driven, we wanted to at first give out something that anybody would have an idea about. You know what I mean? Anybody would have an opinion and think they had the correct opinion. And then after that, we got more and more kind of sophisticated when we would start and write half a joke and ask them to finish it. And quite frankly, I thought that was some of the best shit ever, because it was the most interactive stuff that we've probably ever done. And that audience was so funny and so brutal. And I know for a fact, some of those jokes showed up on different, some of those jokes from that showed up on different shows, whether it was television or radio or something else, you know, that there were people that were running with that. And I guess it was almost like it was a prequel to Twitter. In a way, where people do that kind of stuff now on Twitter. But that, I mean, there was just great nights of that.
Comedy really pyramids.
Yeah, the comedy pyramids where you're just, you're writing jokes and they're, the audience is literally topping those jokes. And, you know, Fez could have been like a gag writer with, you know, Mel Brooks or something. I mean, he's that good. Also, so was Billy Staples. Billy Staples was the type of guy who you'd say, I need an idea, and he would write 100. And you would go, here's 99 shitty ideas, and this last one is funny. And he would go, great.
Right, that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, what when Billy Staples was hired as a, say, as a writer, what was his job? Just it was that, I guess, right?
Yeah, it was that. I mean, like, he never wrote jokes for me and Fez.
Not you know, live, he wouldn't write jokes. Like Jackie the Joke Man would write live things for Howard. Billy would write, prepare stuff. Like you said, like a list of things. And then you'd go through them and find one good one.
Yeah, and that would be normally show topics. Or the other funny part of it was bringing him in and reading off his shitty ideas and making him defend it, which he would 100%. You know what I mean? And that would always be really, really funny. I don't know how we came up with the bit where he wiped his ass with your paycheck, though.
Yeah.
But that was a work that turned into a shoot with you. You were insane.
Right. He wiped his. This was prior to direct deposit. And he wiped his poop on my check, which I have to obviously still cash.
Yeah. But that could have been a direct deposit. I mean, that could have been the new term for it. Direct deposit. Wiping your ass with somebody else's check.
Yeah. I remember I cursed on the air because I remember that had to get beeped out. That's how furious I was.
But you knew he was going to do it, right?
I did know he was going to do it. Yes. But just his attitude while he was doing it, I didn't care for that.
I know. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's when you know that you're in the goddamn bit. That's when you know that it's working.
And then what happened with Joe Poo? So Joe Poo also came aboard. I feel like he was very young at the time. Like he was
like crazy.
20, 21 years old. So he would just call up and say, I eat my own poo. This was his thing.
And he would do it at the most inappropriate times. And it was always funny. And then we asked him to come down. All he was really doing, though, was kind of fighting with somebody on the air. One of the others, I heard from him, I don't know, several years ago.
Yeah.
I forget what it was. And he was like, I wish I would have went more with that opportunity. And I'm like, I think you took it as far as you could. You know
actually,
I mean?
I talked to him about a year ago.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I'm Facebook friends with him, and he will still, like, I'll be like, happy birthday, mom, 77. He'll write under it, I eat my own poo. I'm like, she doesn't want to hear that. She doesn't know what that means. He's still doing it on Facebook. I eat my own poo under people's things.
But did he? That's the real question. That's what we never figured out.
I felt like Joe Poo, when he came in to be a writer or an idea guy, I feel like he really struggled with that. And I don't know, what do you think happened there? Was he just too young or was he?
Well, look, not everybody loves radio. You know what I mean? I fell into radio. Anthony fell into radio, but both of us ended up enjoying it. But a lot of people, I mean, the entire process is like what you were saying about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The entire process. I mean, I really think that the best shows are supposed to blow up. You know what I mean? The best shows are supposed to not last all that long. And if you look at that NEW lineup, everybody did, you know, come apart at one point or another. Doesn't mean that everybody isn't out doing what they want to. They want to do now, you know, but all the teams hit some kind of a wall.
I think like with the Joe Poo thing, I think from what I saw of it, it felt like that you guys thought he was a very funny kid that wasn't pushing himself. So you guys would push him for him, hoping it would get him over some sort of hump.
I mean, I think that that you're thinking back on this on a level that I don't really even remember that much.
I'm very reflective.
Yeah. But I mean, kids come and go. There's no doubt about it. You know what I mean? And, you know, the tough ones stick it out and other people are just like, oh, man, this is not worth the price. But to people like us, it always was worth the price. So people who think differently aren't in our tribe. You know what I mean? It's just a different way of doing stuff. That's all. Doesn't mean that anybody's wrong and anybody else is right. It's just like, well, this is the way, you know, we're just going to keep on going.
When the company tried to do 92.3 Free FM and brought Opie and Anthony back and you guys back, the format was dead already though, right? Like, I feel like terrestrial radio was, as far as the talk format on terrestrial radio, was not in a good, like, you couldn't do what we did at NEW.
I would certainly disagree because, I mean, our last book there, we got a big bonus and everything. We were killing it, but I think that you need such a strong program director in that kind of thing that's able to have the conversations that we're having right now. You know what I mean? About, hey, go with it. Don't go with it. Dude, drop it. Tomorrow you got to have something else. So don't feel so cocky. You really need somebody like that to explain things. And O&A were already in whatever their O&A problems were that they knew long before the rest of us knew. You know what I mean? Then they had a couple other shows on there that, you know, they weren't kind of going to work in New York. They might have worked somewhere else. But I don't think that they had a management team who knew what to do, to know how to move stuff around. And you got to have the right guy there all the time.
Yeah. So then what led eventually to Fez deciding to retire from radio? Because you guys went to JFK after NEW, then to satellite radio, and you'd been doing shows for many, many, many years.
Yeah. Well, Fez has got a lot of, I mean, he just recently has, like in the past 2 weeks, had another massive heart attack where he died twice. He died and they had to get his heart started. They put him on a ventilator for a couple of days. And when they took him off the ventilator, his heart stopped again. So he's had a massive amount of health problems over the years. And you know, part of it is he's got a weak ticker. He got a shit heart from Jump Street, I guess.
Does he look back on his radio life as that was a great time and that was cool? And
100%.
He does.
Yeah. He loves it. And we talk about, you know, I mean, his memory is much better than mine, but you know, he knows, look, nobody was doing a gay voice on the air. And when people tried to shame him, he handed them their ass time and time and time again. I mean, he did that voice in Redneck Florida. When I started in Florida, I was getting anti-Semitic things because I was nasal. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, this guy must be a Jew from New York because he's nasal. And all I did was try to learn some Yiddish terms that I would then start to drop in just to make him crazier. So when Fez came in and started doing the Fez voice, those rednecks went fucking crazy at first, but they all ended up loving him. Same thing when he came to New York, no one could believe it. And they all ended up loving him.
Did he feel a lot of pressure to do those Fezitorials every Friday?
He loves it, dude.
I know he loves it, but I would think like the pressure to like what is going to be the perfect topic that fits into the Fezitorial script.
Here's the thing. The difference, reason why you can't understand that is that you have zero talent. Fez has immense talent.
Oh, I see.
This thing of writing that and making people laugh was a driving factor in his life. And that's why, like you were talking about, if somebody came in and they were like, this is too hard, Fez wasn't going to be able to relate to that. You know what I mean? Of course, it'd be like if somebody on a football team telling you that it hurts to tackle people and they get exhausted running around and they'd like to sit down for a while.
Yeah, get a breather.
You're just going to say, this is not for you, you know? Fez loved that. Billy Staples loved that kind of stuff. My guys now, Chris Stanley, Vito, love it. Gail loves it. So that's the kind of people that you want in your life. Earl still doesn't get it after right. All these years. The thing that Earl is great at is being Earl. And that's what he brings to it. I always say in this thing that we do, you're either going to tell the joke or be the joke. It's up to you. It doesn't matter, but a joke is going to get done, you know.
And we need people to be the joke also, like myself.
100%. Think to the guys that people hung out with in high school. One guy was going to be the butt of the jokes, right? Mm-hmm. One guy doesn't mean everybody doesn't love him, because they appreciate that. Because they don't have to be that guy. He doesn't show up. Somebody else has to fall into that position. So, yeah, you need all the colors in the rainbow to make the thing work out. But I have to tell you, Al, and I'm listening to you here, and you got to be one of the worst interviewers I've ever heard in my Thank life. You. Because it's all just about you and your feelings.
Yeah,
and
how did I fit in?
Yeah, this is nothing about capturing what happened at Denny W. Here's what I would do. I wouldn't air this episode, and I would delete the Anthony and then tell everyone else, I'm sorry.
It's not going to work out.
We've decided not to do it. I'm in the last midlife crisis of my entire life. Did you ever marry?
No, not yet. I do have a girlfriend of 6 years.
I don't believe
still
you.
Still not married.
Where is she? Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada?
That's right.
You're an asexual. please put me on with her. I want to tell her nothing is going forward. Is she much younger than you, Al?
No, very similar age. She's like 2 years younger than me. So, yeah.
She's thrown away any opportunity that there is
right.
for happiness.
Potentially. I was hoping to, the one thing I wanted to get out of this is who's Kenny Allen. And I'm still going to end. I'm going to walk away from this. Still no answers years later.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of it, right?
Do you at the NEW time, if we had Twitter and videos and Instagrams, would you have liked that, or would that have ruined it for you?
I will tell you, this is it's funny that you brought that up, because I remember being surprised that ronfez.net started at that time, right? And then when I'm like, that's weird, you know, people writing about the show and what they think and who they think should be fired and who they think is good, who they think stinks. And then one night, I think I got a call, or maybe it was an email, And they go, hey, we're having a Ron and Fez get together at Hooters, and we would love for you to be there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I decide when there's Ron and Fez get togethers. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I've done this for a long time. I planned the big party. We put on a show, and it's, you know, you sit down, you watch it, but it had changed. You know what I mean? It had changed where they were like, what we have in common is that we listen to a show and then we go and talk and we do stuff too. And we meet each other and we have sex or whatever we do. And I'm like, okay, you got to roll with this. You know what I mean? Like, that changed. And then Twitter, of course, changed stuff, and Instagram changes stuff. But I remember, like, when we in Florida and we did a, you know, we would do a gig, we wouldn't know who was going to show up. You know what I mean? We weren't selling tickets. So we'd say, we'll be at this thing, and everybody would show up and they wouldn't know each other. They would stand next to each other. But once the websites started and the boards started, they would talk to each other and start to plan their own things. And it in my opinion, it changed everything a lot, because it kind of meant, like, the problem I have with, like, any of that stuff is now the show isn't over. You know what I mean? You're talking about writing a Fezzatorial. People expect somebody to write a funny tweet, do a funny Instagram. You know what I mean? And you're like, but this isn't even the show.
Or they'd want the Fezzatorial immediately after it aired to be on a video on social media. Where's 100%. The Fezzatorial?
Yeah. And that, you know, and of course, life goes on, technology goes on, but it did take away from radio itself. Radio stopped being the friend, and the friend is now the telephone, and radio was on the telephone, you know?
Yeah, I also liked not knowing what the radio host looked like, and the studio was always a mystery to me. Like, if 60 Minutes ever did a piece on a radio person, you could peek in and be like, what does their studio look like? Now everything is just out there.
Right. And I remember when the studios were always on the outside of town. You know what I mean? Like, JFK had Howard and, you know, Donna Mike, and it was a big, big radios. And I went there and I'm like, this is a shit box. You know what I mean? It's in Fairfax, Virginia. They haven't updated their stuff, nothing. And that's how radio stations used to be. They used to be on the outside of town, you know, and now it's supposed to look like, you know, Facebook or some shit.
And what's the biggest difference for you now with satellite versus what NEW was? Like, what are the things that you see as the big difference?
Well, everything, of course, is different because you can't shock anymore. And now everybody has a podcast. You know what I mean? Like, your listeners have podcasts. Your guests have podcasts. You know what I mean? Everybody has one. Ball players have podcasts, actors have podcasts, and they all pretend that they're doing radio. And they go, you know, I always wanted to do radio. I go, this isn't radio. Even I'm not doing radio in satellite. I'm doing something different than radio. Do you feel like you're still doing radio today in sports radio?
I guess, but it feels different in that I feel like there's so many less shared experiences now. Like, the audience is so broken up. So the amount of people listening to radio now versus during the NEW time, I think, has shrunk a lot. And people are just spread out everywhere now. So it's not like everybody's not hearing, like, Mike and the Mad Dog. That was a thing everybody listened to if you were into sports.
Right.
And now being into sports, your interest can now be spread over so many different things that you're just listening to. So it feels weird. It does feel weird.
I think it's always funny too with the sports is, like, it's always football season now. It's constant football talk. And I'm like, I really don't care. I don't care who gets traded. I'm going to pay attention to my team when we go rolling back in September. I don't want to think about it during April.
Yeah, it never ends. The season goes on forever. That happened with like the NFL channel on Sirius, the MLB channel. They just do it year round. And where did the Sias come from? Where you would go, Sue.
That was the old Run Around show. That was just like a thing that took off And, you know, like everything else, it gets more embarrassing every year. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah, I don't know. We used to say, see you like that. I don't know why.
I used to like sometimes, I forget the NEW show. We would go off at 11 or 10. I think maybe at 11 it would end. And it's starting at 10 o'clock. People were calling up. I just want to do a see you. We still got an hour left of the show to go.
Yeah. I just want to say see you to everybody.
I thought the see you worked great during comedy pyramids. Where people would give their thing out. They go, see. So it was like the way they would punctuate their line,
right,
or something. So now you do the Bennington show with Gail, your daughter Gail.
Mm-hmm.
When did she first seem like she was interested in doing radio?
She was always 2 feet away from us most of our entire life, you know, with me and Fez. And we'd take shows out on the road. Even as a little kid, she'd be going along with us. And any of conversations, Fez used to come over to the house all the time. I'd go to bed and him and my kids would sit up watching TV and having fun. So she's always been around it. It's just as natural as anything else.
I like it. Do you think Fez would do something like this?
Well,
would sit
right
down
now,
and discuss.
Yeah. I see, here's the thing. I'll be honest. I mean, I would bring it up to him, but you've aggravated me.
Yeah.
And he could end up dying while he screams at you. You don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, I feel like I made Fez. I think Fez has been mad at me for a while because there was something that you guys were doing in studio on satellite where
you know what, you know what it was, Al?
What?
It was a 9/11. We were getting everybody back together in 9/11. And you acted like, fuck you guys.
No, so, it wasn't like that. But you're right. I said, no, I can't come in studio. That would be against my policies.
Right. And here's the thing. Wow. It's almost like you said it to the victims of 9/11. Right. Not so much to us.
You know, I thought it was something much not as serious. But now that you say that, that does make sense.
Yeah.
All right. I understand now.
You should have understood anyway.
I should have. But yeah, I remember saying, well, I could call, but I can't come in. I think the company would not like that.
I'm going to tell you again. This is not an interview. This is about you.
Yeah.
And who you think doesn't like you and why you can't commit to your girlfriend.
Right.
And quite frankly, I mean, I would expect this out of a much younger man.
Yeah.
But this is needy and it seems like it's going on forever.
I'm 52. I'll be 52 this year. That's old.
No one gives a fuck, Al.
Oh, again.
You're just a fucking crazy old man who I wouldn't be surprised if there's a blow up doll sitting in that fucking Woodbridge apartment with you.
I've moved since Woodbridge. Yeah. I'm down the Jersey Shore now.
Where?
Bradley Beach by Asbury Park. It's like a next town over.
Are you right on the beach? You're looking at the ocean?
Okay. It's a very tiny.
Yeah.
Tiny home.
Everything about you has been, yeah. I'm going to come down and I'm going to bring drugs and I'm going to bring bikers and we're going to finally fucking make you an adult. That's what we're going to do.
It's too late.
No, this is going to be the coming of age summer. It's white boy summer for Al Dukes. I'm going to get a hold of Anthony. I'm going to get a hold of the Vopi, Don and Mike. I'm going to get the radio chick in here and everybody is going to get together and sacrifice you.
All of the sports guys. Hopefully you could get a couple of those guys.
Spots guys. Al, this can't go on all night.
No, we are good.
Nothing came out of this.
This has been perfect.
Look, please, to everybody else who worked at NEW, do not do this show. I can't tell you how aggravated I am now and how this just had to do with Al.
Yeah.
And nothing else.
Well, that's why I need to talk to Fez as well. I must apologize for the 9/11 thing and then also see how else I could learn about myself by talking to Fez.
I'm telling you right now, you will kill him. You will literally kill him.
I do not want to do that. So maybe after he feels better.
Why? How long is this fucking NEW look back at your life going to go? Nobody ever wants to go to a high school reunion.
Yeah.
Now. Because we run into people like you who suddenly get bold as the years go along. Like, hey, guys, why did everybody used to pull my shorts down in front of the girl? You know, we're like, yeah. I don't fucking know.
Right.
Well, I'm just looking, been really, but just been looking back this year. So it's just a look back for me. So thank you for looking back with me. This has been terrific.
Can I tell you something?
Yes.
I'm going to, as soon as I hang up with you, I'm going to call my lawyer. And if this runs, I will sue you and I will sue you. Who's the carrier here? What is this on?
We're a new company now, Odyssey.
We're going to sue Entercom Odyssey.
Change their name to Odyssey.
Odyssey, Odyssey, what we're doing this year. You ought to see it. Okay, Al.
We do again. See is at the end?
Yeah, you do all the right. First.
All right.
So, all right, you ready?
Yeah. Hello?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records. This is a national contest.